You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it.
I'd like to welcome you all to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor with myself, DJ Ambush, and Dr. Bukasi Dubé. This week, we are joined by our third host, Dr. Evans. Good to see you both today. How are you guys doing?
Good to see you too, DJ Ambush. Good to see you, Dr. Dubé.
Doing well. It's good to see you, Chris. It's good to see you, Ambush, man. It's been a while since we did this, so it's good to be back on air.
Absolutely. It's been a while since we did it. A lot of things have happened, a lot of things going on. We know we like to always keep our listeners up to date with any of the issues that are popping up in the health world, especially affect our community uniquely. So it's good to be back in another session with you all. So,
before we begin, right. Ambush, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I am 46 for the first time. The game plan is next year I'll turn 46 again, and we'll see how many years I'm going to turn 46. And you know, I feel like it's a good year to stay at, so I'm going to, you know, hang right here for a little while. But no, I'm feeling a lot better, especially, you know, having had that fight with COVID about a month ago. I was telling a colleague of mine, having COVID actually prepared me to go on vacation, which was scheduled 2 weeks after me having COVID, which there was a level of guilt, of course, having been out of the office for 2 weeks and then having a vacation not too long scheduled after that. But I talked about it in the last episode, the level of exhaustion that you experience is unmatched. Like, I couldn't return text messages. I thought I could knock out a couple of emails. I'm falling asleep doing that. So it was just really, a really, really exhausting time for me. And not being able to do anything prepared me to be on vacation where I wasn't supposed to be doing anything. And I think otherwise I would have planned to do work during vacation and just work from home and, you know. But all of that aside, I'm here. I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm 46. And I'm doing good. Yeah.
That's good.
So what are we talking about this week in the first half?
Well, so we have the new vaccines that are available, the new boosters that are available, the bivalent vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna. And there have been a lot of questions out there that people have been asking about. Maybe we should just jump right in, and maybe Dr. Evans, you can bring us up to speed about these new vaccines. What are they, and why are they so special?
Right.
Thanks, Dr. Dubé and DJ Ambush. Again, I'm glad you're better and glad feeling better. And you know that tiredness with a COVID infection is unfortunately a very common thing folks are saying. So, yeah, lots of folks unfortunately are getting COVID. And actually, just to pivot from that, I know a lot of folks are like, well, you know, if I get COVID, I got the vaccine and I'm still getting COVID. And like, you know, the vaccines are not necessarily, you know, made to prevent you from getting COVID. It's made from prevent you from getting severely ill from COVID and send you to the hospital. So it's not like the vaccines don't work. They work because people recover. So I just want to kind of use that as a jumping off point. But
Dr. Evans, before you jump into that, another quick, you know, question. So the vaccines are also used to decrease, you know, what you're going to deal with once you do contract it. How much does that play with the effects of long COVID? Because for me, I feel like that's the thing a lot of us aren't talking about and how much of an issue that can be. It's like, oh, yeah, I got through COVID and I made it through and I'm fine. But what are the long COVID effects? You know, I think people aren't really taking that into account. And what effect does vaccines have on that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think it's still it's a point that's still being worked out. What I would say, though, that, you know, there definitely is a correlation between your severity of illness and your risk of developing long COVID. So if you get really sick, you know, your risk of developing long COVID is really high. So I think the fact that most people, even though they do become ill, they have, and if they're vaccinated, they have, you know, shorter and less severe symptoms. I don't know sort of what the research is saying about, you know, everyone's overall risk, but I would just say based on, you know, the fact that people are not in the hospital, end up in the ICU, all those other things, your risk of some of the long-term sequelae of COVID are severely, severely, severely decreased. So that's a good thing. But, you know, as, you know, the fact that you're better and you're recovered, hopefully recovering, I still think it's a good time to think about getting your booster, as you're about to talk about.
Yes.
So, and your flu vaccine, but I'll come back to that one again. So I think, you know, one thing we've all talked about is that COVID is always a moving target, that the virus is changing and will continue to change as it continues to replicate. And as sort of new sort of versions of the virus come out, our vaccines will need to be updated. So just to kind of take us back to the beginning of 2020, you know, sort of we had our original strain of COVID. And since then, we've had, you know, our Beta, Omicron, Delta, all different versions of COVID, and now we're sort of in the Omicron phase. And the original vaccines, when they were made, both the mRNA vaccines for Pfizer and Moderna, were made based on the original template of the first sort of version of COVID, COVID 1.0. And what we have known is that as the virus changes, the ability for the vaccine, the original vaccine, to target these minor changes, or, you know, over time, it becomes like a little bit less effective. And so what has happened, or what's happening now, is that the updated COVID vaccine that targets the BA4 and BA5 versions are a little bit more specifically targeting sort of the new circulating variants out there. So the vaccines right now, the sort of the updated mRNA vaccines, the new boosters, the bivalent vaccines, as they're called, kind of include, basically they have sort of half the dose of your original strain, like, you know, COVID 1.0, but then they also have half the dose of this new updated BA4, BA5 sort of variant to target those variants. This is meant specifically for folks that have actually completed their primary series. So I'm hoping everyone listening today has already gotten their first two doses of their Moderna or their Pfizer or their Johnson & Johnson. And so that's your primary series. And then this would sort of be your booster after. There are also folks too that might have gotten multiple vaccines. So they might have gotten their first two Pfizers, then they got their booster later on, and then because they're over 50, they got another booster. Well, welcome. This is going to be booster number. This is going to be your next booster. So it's going to be vaccine number 5. So this booster should be given 2 months after your last sort of booster, last vaccination.
So again, you said 2 months?
2 months, yes.
Okay.
So you've completed your vaccine series, or you got a booster, you know, a few months ago. Now it's time to get your updated bivalent booster. So the first vaccines are called monovalent because they just kind of target just the first original strain. And the new updated vaccines are called bivalent vaccines because they basically target two things, the original strain and then this new sort of variant that's circulating. So again, 2 months after your last booster or your last sort of primary series. And then for those folks who have gotten ill, you know, folks have gotten ill even though they've gotten their vaccines, it's still a little bit of a gray zone about when you should sort of get your booster. But I think most people are thinking, you know, if anything, about 90 days after you're sort of you've recovered is a good time to consider getting this new updated booster. There's nothing wrong with getting a little earlier, but again, we know that getting COVID once does not necessarily protect you from getting COVID again. And so we definitely want to make sure that we give you full protection, not just from their natural sort of possibly immunity, but also from these new updated vaccines. So that's kind of, that's it. And also your flu vaccine. Sorry.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So is it? Oh, there's no issue with getting the flu vaccine and this vaccine at the same time.
There isn't. You know, you can get multiple vaccines at the same time. Some people may have a little bit more symptoms getting the vaccine, but there's no contraindication with getting your flu vaccine with your updated booster. So yeah.
So just go to your pharmacy, go to your doctor, go to your primary care provider, and get your booster, get your these new bivalent boosters, and also get your flu shot while you're at it. You get two shots, the price of one, and by the way, they're free. So
right, right. Yeah, and these bivalent these boosters are available everywhere now. They've already been rolled out.
I think they are. I mean, I think there's probably a lot of folks who are still trying to get an appointment for the bivalent because, you know, as any new things come out, you know, appointment spots are taken. But I think the federal government has sort of rolled them out. So we have them here at OHSU. And of course, they're also possibly at your Costco and your CVSs and so forth. So I think you can look and see when appointments are available and go get your vaccines.
Okay. So yep. I am new to all of this, of course. This sounds like emerging technology. Sounds absolutely amazing. The fact that this particular vaccine has components from the existing virus, well, earlier viruses and emerging viruses all together to fight both at the same time. Is this a unique situation in development? Did this happen as a result of what we're dealing with, COVID specifically, or was this something that's already been in practice with other other viruses?
Man, you're putting on your public health hat here.
Well, and I have my Instagram doctorate, so let's do it.
Yeah, so it's I'll speak a little to this and then let Dr. Evans chime in as well. So this idea of updating vaccines is old. It's been happening for a long time. Actually, our flu shots use a similar idea, right? They come up with new versions of the flu shot every single year. They use this predictive analytics that's actually very, very complex to try and figure out every single year what the next season's flu is going to look like, and make vaccines based on based on that predictive analytics. It's actually very neat science. If you want to geek out on it, there's quite a lot of material available out there to look at. So, and we'll continue to see this, right, as we move from the pandemic stage to the more predictable endemic version of the COVID-19 infection, we will continue to update these vaccines, and there will be new boosters hopefully once a year.
I agree with Dr. Dubey. I mean, I think we've sort of gone to, you know, masks have come off. this is the new reality. COVID is here, and it's going to be here for a very long time to come. We've sort of pivoted to sort of knowing what it is now to live with COVID. And I think it's really going to be really important, you know, not only to protect yourself, but also, you know, I think, again, a lot of us have sort of been estranged from family members over the past couple of years because of travel issues, COVID, you know, expensive plane flights, expensive gas. And so, you know, if folks are thinking about getting together with the holidays and you have vulnerable folks around you, you know, your grandmas, grandpas, aunts and uncles, you know, this is not only a way to just protect yourself, but also protect community. And so, of course, if you're sick, stay home. But if you're feeling well, get your vaccines to protect yourself and also, again, to protect others. And so I think it's just really a sort of a community effort to make sure that all of us stay well.
Are people to expect the same effects from the bivalent vaccine that they experience with other vaccines, like, you know, possible soreness, maybe lethargic for a couple of days? Or, and I'm sure that differs from person to person. There are some people that get it and don't experience much of anything. So was that they to experience pretty much the same thing with this one?
Yeah, so that's what we've seen so far, and that's what we expect as well, that people will experience the same things that they experienced that last time. Of note, those reactions, the soreness, the fatigue and all that are not side effects. They are not adverse effects. It's something that's common with any injection, any new thing that's introduced to the body. And it shows that the vaccine is actually working. So yes, you are indeed right, DJ Ambush.
Okay.
And just to add to one thing I forgot to add is that there are two sort of versions now for the bivalent vaccine. So there's Moderna, and Moderna is the bivalent vaccine is for those folks 18 and up, mm-hmm. while the Pfizer vaccine is for those folks 12 and up. So when you go down to your doctor's office or your CVS or so forth, and you're asking for that vaccine, be very clear, of course, which vaccine you're asking for, but to also make sure that you get the right vaccine based on your age.
So I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm hearing everything about this vaccine. It sounds like the best thing since sliced bread. Is it? And I'm sure the people from the community are going to be like, well, you know, I got the new vaccine. It's like the new Jordans that dropped. I'm untouchable at this point. Is it unrealistic for people to expect like any additional sense of security and safety because of what this particular vaccine is? Like, masks are off, but we're still suggesting that people, if you're going to be in dense populated areas, wear a mask where it's possible to safely distance, do that. Could this give people a false sense of security because of the type of vaccine that this is?
Well, so I think a lot of it is you have to understand weigh your risks, right? You have to understand who you are and your who you live with and who's around you. So those mitigation factors that we talked about in the past, masking and distancing, still work very well. They're still very protective. Look at it as layers of mitigation. I think it was Dr. Evans who talked about, you know, hey, we're in Oregon, it rains a lot. So take an umbrella, take a rain jacket when there's a possibility of the rains coming to wherever you are. It's the same thing in this case. You understand, hey, I live with an elderly parent, I live with an elderly relative, there's somebody in my community who's immunocompromised, I want to make sure that I'm protecting them and decreasing the risk of spreading the disease to them. So yes, I'm going to get my booster. And if I'm going to be in public, if I'm going to be in an area where there's a lot of people, I'm putting on my mask as well. So it's just understanding your situation and protecting yourself to ensure that everybody around you is protected.
And just to add to what Dr. Dubé was saying, of course, you know, there's always going to be a lag time between when you get your vaccines and when you sort of get the benefit. So typically, there are people who say about 2 weeks after you get your vaccine is sort of when you should have circulating, you know, antibodies and so forth. But again, as Dr. Dubé said, you know, still I wear a mask when I go into a crowded space, when I go to the supermarket. And I think also too, I think this is also a good time to talk about sort of respect for people's choices. You know, there are people who are going to choose not to wear a mask, and I have to respect that. And there are people who are going to choose to wear a mask, and I think other folks should respect that. I think everyone needs to make a decision that best fits them and their comfort level. And so I think as neighbors, we just have to respect everyone else's choices. And so that's kind of where I'm moving. Yeah.
With holiday seasons coming up and us moving further into the end of the year, this is typically flu season. What relationship will that have to COVID? I mean, some of the aspects that make flu more prevalent in the later part of the year, as some of that relative to COVID. And then so we also talk about your weakened immune system. And if you have other things that make you more susceptible to different strains of COVID, could you talk about that a little bit?
So you're saying that if someone is immunocompromised, would their reactivity to the vaccine? I'm sorry.
I guess what I'm asking is, how much more important is it that they are taking all of the steps necessary to protect themselves moving into the flu season? raw back inside and, you know, all of those factors.
100%. I mean, we definitely see flu. I mean, we haven't gotten into like the peak of flu season, but there's definitely a concern that we may have a pretty bad flu season. And so, you know, I think all the mitigation factors that we've done last year and the year before should still apply, especially if you're immunocompromised, because, you know, there's flu circulating, there is COVID circulating. There's also a lot of other respiratory viruses circulating. We're seeing a lot of folks coming in with cough and fever, and we're like, oh my God, you have COVID, and you test them and they're negative for COVID. So I think, you know, anytime you're indoors, poor air circulation, you know, hugs and kisses, it's the holidays, you have a risk of transmitting infection. This is sort of us as human beings. And I think, you know, mitigating those factors will include, you know, wearing a mask if you feel that that's warranted. Of course, getting vaccinated is another layer. Strict hand washing is another layer. And the most important thing is if you feel sick, stay home. And I think I would have said that even before COVID. If you're sick, stay home. You don't want to pass this along to anyone else. And so, you know, stay home, get better, and then, you know, you can go back to your activities. But don't go out if you're feeling ill.
So pretty much the exact same factors we've been discussing this entire time. I do like that additional perspective of weighing your options and understanding what your risks are. I think it's a good way to just to look at infection moving forward, no matter if it's COVID, flu, anything. Who do you have at home? Who is at risk? Are there immunocompromised people in your workplace and, you know, at home, you know, just in your life? Are you immunocompromised and possibly don't know it because you have some undiagnosed issues? There's so many different things that we need to be aware of and take in consideration when we're weighing whether we should or shouldn't get vaccinated or boosted or just wear a mask. So, yeah, thank you for constantly, you know, bringing that up and just, you know, keeping us properly reminded, rather, of the different mitigation factors and how important that is, no matter what version of what vaccine is out and no matter what version of COVID is out.
Another question that has come up quite a bit is, hey, we just had a lot of people talking about the monkeypox and monkeypox vaccine, and there's the questions that have come in asking if it's okay to get your monkeypox vaccine at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. And yes, it is totally fine to do that. It's safe to do that, and it's the right thing to do. So go out there I know that we've talked about the monkeypox. We've had two information sessions. We've had two episodes dedicated to monkeypox. And yes, it is safe to take to get your monkeypox vaccine at the same time as your flu shot and your COVID-19 vaccine.
Before we switch gears, I'm glad you brought up monkeypox. Has anything changed in a way of people pursuing the vaccine? I mean, is it at a point now where more of us should be looking to get vaccinated, or is it still really about being aware of your surroundings and if you think you've been exposed?
Yeah, so OHA has sort of increased the sort of eligibility around getting access to the vaccine to make it a little bit less specific, because we know there are going to be risks that are not sort of promulgated, you know, sex, so forth, high-risk environments. But, you know, the big risk around getting monkeypox, HMPV, is skin-to-skin contact. And that could happen in many different ways that are not sex-driven. You know, if you work as a massage therapist, you know, just by nature of your job, you could have an exposure. And so I think, you know, it's really about if you have a risk around direct skin-to-skin contact, or if you may fit in an immunocompromised group, so it should be someone who's living with HIV, or, you know, maybe you have partners that you don't know sort of their status in terms of whether or not they could be exposed, or you've gotten exposed yourself, definitely try to get your vaccine. The vaccine should be given within 4 days of exposure up to 14, so the earlier you get it, the better. Just remember that it is a two vaccine series, usually given 28 days apart. There are two sort of versions that you might get. Some people may get a shot in their arm and sort of the fatty part, or you may get it sort of as a little bubble underneath your skin. And the little bubble part is just because there's still a limitation in terms of the amount of vaccine. So the federal government has authorized sort of giving it as a lower dose, just as effective. So the studies are showing, but sort of spreading it over more folks. So again, if you qualify, I would say look at the OHA website, but there's definitely some lenience around getting the vaccine if you think you fall in one of those categories.
Yeah. Oregon is one of the first states to liberalize the use of monkeypox vaccine, and simply saying that if you think you are high risk, regardless of what group you belong to, you should get the monkeypox vaccine. So I think that's a major change that's happened in the last, I'd say, last 14 to 21 days. So it's available, it's free, and it's if you think you are high risk, you should go ahead and get vaccinated. Before we wrap up our session today, our episode today, there's been a lot of talk in the news about some people who have this human leukocyte antigen HLA gene that is supposedly protects you from getting severe COVID-19 or even COVID-19. That's something that's hot in the news. I remember that there was a paper that came out back in May in clinical immunology back in at the end of May, and it's making the news now. Everybody's is asking questions about that. There are a lot of studies that are out there that people are looking at, and it's not definitive just yet. So yes, pay attention to the news, but at the same time, make sure you're getting, you're asking the experts to answer these questions for you.
That is brand new news to me. I'm going to look into it. I'm going to do my research, on Twitter and Instagram, get all the facts, and I'll bring them back to our next session. Dr. Evans, thank you so much for joining us for part one.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Always good to see you guys.
Good seeing you, my man.
As we move into part two, where we'll be discussing behavior and mental health during COVID, Dr. Dubé, could you introduce our guests?
So we have two guests with us today who will be joining us. And it's an honor to have them here, because this is something that we haven't paid much attention to, and COVID-19 has really forced us to talk about mental health. And in the Black and Brown community, mental health has not been prioritized, but COVID-19 has forced us to do just that. Without further ado, I bring on to you, David. Please go ahead, introduce yourself, and then we'll have Rocha do that as well.
Oh, well, hey, thank you guys for having me on here. His name is David. I am a drug and alcohol counselor with a program called REAL through LifeWorks. My program works primarily with African-American youth. And I also am working with OHA on our CSOC community, the 988 community there. So that's why I'm here today.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm Rusha Grinstead. And I am leading the 988 and the Behavioral Health Crisis System Design and Implementation here at OHA. As David mentioned, we have a crisis system work group, which has been guiding us and really giving us the direction of how we establish the policies and the design of our crisis system response for behavioral health across the state. The crisis system advisory work group, it is 100% comprised of individuals and families with lived experiences. And they are guiding our work so that we have behavioral health response to behavioral crisis in our communities.
Thank you both so much for the work that you're doing.
I'm so appreciative of being in this space, because when I was in school, it feels like a lifetime ago. I'm not going to date myself, but it's been quite a while. Peer support was not emphasized. And now bringing folks with lived experiences to the forefront of healthcare delivery and saying, hey, your lived experience is very, very important in dealing with all sorts of diseases, right? Be they physical or mental, these having people with lived experiences share their stories, providing support to folks experiencing crisis is very, very important. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about this, David and Rusha, you can tell us a little bit about the 988 line, how it came into being, and how it's being used here in the state of Oregon.
We, as you already know, I'm sure, about the National Suicide Hotline, which has existed for a while. And back in October of 2020, federal legislation was passed to change it to a 3-digit phone number, 988, so that mm-hmm. easy to remember for everyone, because the last thing you can do when you're in the middle of a behavioral health crisis is remember a 10-digit phone number. So the legislation was passed to change it to a 3-digit, easy to remember phone number, which is 988. And it also includes text and chat. And the other thing that was added was not just keeping it limited to if you're experiencing suicide ideation or if you know someone who's experiencing suicide ideation, but to all kinds of behavioral health crisis, so that you're also preventing individuals and families from getting to that kind of a crisis where they are considering suicide. How can we be a little bit more upstream? And that change went into effect July of 2022. So now you are able to call, text, or chat with 988 whenever you need any kind of crisis counseling. You are also going to be to be connected to services in your community, which will help you, you know, in the long term, continue maintain relationships with providers in your community. And then for those for whom the crisis counseling over the phone is, or text or chat is not enough at that moment, they will be able to get services from mobile crisis teams who will show up in person to provide a behavioral health de-escalation and crisis intervention, and able to connect you to other long-term services. So really helping the individual and/or family to deal with the crisis situation at that moment. And then also, can we make sure as much as possible that you are not going to experience a crisis again down the line?
That is excellent information. Mm-hmm. So does this work for, I'm hearing 988, and you know, the first thing I compare it to is like 911. You know, when you see something happen, you dial 911, you make sure you get someone here that can help assist in the situation. Does 988 work in the same way, whereas if we're witness to someone, or maybe we're a family member, or maybe a friend, or it could be just someone in the public that has access to a phone, where a houseless citizen doesn't have access to a phone to dial 988, where we can also use this number mm-hmm. to reach out and get some assistance?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I have personally done so, where I have witnessed someone. I live in Salem, and I have witnessed someone in Salem. I did not know, but the person clearly needed some kind of behavioral health support, and I have called 988, and they were able to connect me to the mobile crisis team at the county, and they sent a mobile crisis team to help the individual. But I don't know, David, if you wanted to add to something, or if you have ever called 988 personally and wanted to bring that here.
Yeah, no, Rusha, what you're saying is actually the same thing I've experienced. I've called 988 before during crises, mental health crises with clients, and it was the same thing. You know, I think they try to model a lot of the response to like a 911 type thing, where even if you're not the one in crisis at the moment, they will still be able to help. The same principle, I believe.
Some of the major highlights of this line is that instead of calling 911, right, you call 988. And the whole idea is, well, not the whole idea, but part of the issue that brought this to light is that we've seen a lot of people experiencing crisis and then end up incarcerated or end up dead or end up being harmed in some way because because we've used excessive force in dealing with someone who's experiencing crisis. So it's really, really important to call 988 because you get a counselor readily available to you in that crisis, in that moment, who helps you deal with whatever it is that you're dealing with. And then some of the data that we've seen is that the wait times for 988 call are much, much shorter than, say, 911 call. In the month of August, we learned that I think it was the wait time was about 17 seconds. Mm-hmm. That is, talk about customer service. Talk about responding to a crisis.
Yeah,
that's phenomenal in my viewpoint.
Absolutely, I can draw from experience. I placed a 911 call last week. There was a fire across the street from the museum. A member of the houseless community, their home was on fire in front of the church right across the street. And the wait time for me to get an actual person on the phone for 911 was 3 minutes. And this is at a fire. So, I mean, at what point are their personal belongings safe after 3 minutes of being on fire? So 17 seconds is absolutely amazing. Yeah. And I wish I would have had knowledge of dialing 988 just for the person to have someone to talk to or whatever services could be provided after the fact. I could imagine the mental anguish that person was in after seeing all of their belongings just, you know, being gone, being decimated like that.
I think it's also good that to note that they're, you know, they also have the ability to text someone, right? I know it's like only, you can only do it in English right now, and they're working on that. But, you know, oftentimes, especially for our young, you know, our teenage population, you know, texting seems to be the quickest way to get a hold of somebody these days when you're texting somebody in that teenage, you know, age range, that, you know, when they are having those moments of, you know, mental health dysregulation, they can just get on there. They don't have to call somebody. They can get on there, text 988 and be like, hey, I'm having a huge anxiety right now, you know, and you can get somebody on there to respond and start helping them, you know, giving them skills, whatever it is that they need, resources to deal with it at the moment. That it's that whole upstream prevention that's going on, right? And, you know, I'm hoping to see that we start expanding it to other areas, not just texting. Maybe we can do other things like, you know, we can start doing video conferencing. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's obviously going to be future stuff. But right now, I think we're at a very solid foundation for this 988 system.
I think just to make sure that folks who are listening to this have a clear sense of what to expect. So the texting and online chat is currently available only in English. However, the call services are currently available in both Spanish and English. And there are also interpretation services in more than 150 languages. We know that there are that many languages in the Portland Metro. The zip code, 97236 has 90 languages spoken in, wow, in that zip code. And so to have all those languages represented in this readily available on 988 is quite remarkable.
Can we talk a little bit about how we got here? Specifically, you, David and Arusha, what brought you to this work? And what did this work look like before COVID and how COVID affected this you know, that your journey through behavioral health?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So definitely, you know, so the population I serve, you know, we already have pre-existing conditions, right? Substance use, various forms of mental health issues. And when COVID hit, it was like, you kind of see data, right? You guys seen all the data points. So you look at it and there's these squiggly lines and all that. But when COVID hit, all the stressors, it was like all of a sudden, like there was a steep incline. I mean, it was steep. I mean, it was like little hills and bumps on this line, and then suddenly there was this cliff that went straight up on the data points. And the reason being, I believe, was that suddenly there's this unknown thing happening to the world immediately. And it wasn't just on the news. It wasn't just on the radio. It was in our communities. It was this unseen enemy, if you will, this death out in the streets that we didn't know what to do with it. Nobody knew what was going on. So it enhanced all these preconditions that were happening. And I saw immediately at the time when COVID first hit, I was actually working inpatient at that time. And suddenly we were trying to figure out how to keep our clients safe, how to keep staff safe. We were trying to figure out all these things, and it wasn't just taking a toll on clients. It was taking the toll on the staff as well. Right. Cause it was just this unseen enemy that everybody had to deal with. And so within the first 3 months, within the first 90 days of when this thing hit, I experienced the first suicide of that. And it wasn't that COVID caused it, but COVID definitely enhanced the conditions this person was already dealing with, from all the anxiety, all the depression. Suddenly we're trying to isolate. We're trying to lay people off so they're staying off the streets. And it has just been this thing that, this has been this thing that really needed to be addressed, because nobody at the beginning knew what was going to happen or how we were going to deal with this. And, you know, suddenly everybody's online. We're doing Zoom calls. Oh, I can't come to your house today. You know, people are trying to call 911 for you know, things are happening. And you're getting things in the news like, oh, 911 will not respond unless it's life-threatening. You know, like all these things, that all these supports that people had suddenly were vanishing overnight.
The hospitals were over capacity too.
Yes, the hospitals were over capacity as well. 911 wasn't answering. People were getting their car stolen in their driveway. 911 was not coming out. And that was stressful enough. All these stressors were happening. And then, you know, when I became aware of this, hey, I want to be a part of this, because like I was telling you guys before, I work primarily with African-American youth, and there's already a deep-seated in the African-American community, it doesn't matter what state you're in, as there's already a deep-seated mistrust, if you will, with just calling 911, right? The idea that if somebody has a legalized authority to place you and change you, physically change your life, like place you in holds, place you in jail, issue you any kind of thing like that, you automatically are just not going to trust them. So this thing, this 9-8 thing that is being put together, that's being worked on, I believe that is this, once this takes off, right? Once this becomes as synonymous as 911, that it's going to do huge work for the African-American community, just here in Oregon alone.
It's impressive to see the attention that this has gotten and the backing from the Oregon legislature, right, to actually pass a bill to support this, to strengthen and expand these services, right, is a recognition that we are in a state of crisis, that there are people that need help that are not getting the help. And the amount of money that has been poured into ensuring that everyone, including communities of color, are getting the help that they need is quite impressive. Not just people who speak English as well, right? It's people who speak other languages other than English, Spanish, and all the other 150 languages that we talked about that have translation/interpretation services available when you call 988.
I'm going to resist the urge to politicize this too much, but I think there's no better time than now for people to understand that this is available. I mean, mental health crisis, our houseless citizens have been used as talking points, conversation points leading into the political season and the campaign. People are worried, but to understand that this is a tool that's available now for any citizen who may not be in crisis to assist another citizen who is in crisis, it's extremely important that we get the word out and that people understand that this is available. I think there's often a disconnect in the way that some of our leaders talk about the houseless community and otherizing them in the way that, you know, that's someone else's problem. That's not necessarily my problem. But to have a tool like this where we can assist each other, I think is absolutely amazing. And anything we're going to be able to, anything that we'll have available, any resources we have available to get the word out on this would be absolutely, you know, top priority for us.
I would like to really just quickly point out that, you know, the OHA is really trying to be equitable about this. You know, bringing in people with lived experience is a huge deal, especially like in the communities I serve, you know, because you always hear the, you know, up top, you hear the them and days talks. They really should be able to do this. They really should do that. And OHA is really, I mean, they, you know, they have a lot of people with lived experience. It's one thing to have equality, right? And I'm preaching to the choir this moment where everybody has the same amount of resources, but the equity, when you have those people at the table helping make policy that will further ensure that they get the help they actually need. And OHA is getting really good at including us in that.
Amazing.
Led by the communities who use the service, led by communities that we all live in. And we want to know what works for communities, and we're trying our best to make sure that's where we start when we design this system.
Rusha, I think you knocked it out of the ballpark there, highlighting that the community has to lead this, right? The community, people who are experiencing this have to be at the forefront of guiding development of these programs to ensure that they are actually responding to the needs of the community.
Absolutely.
So just to recap, for anyone that is listening to this episode and wants to make sure they're sharing information with other people, what are the best ways to engage with 988, whether you are someone in crisis or someone looking to assist someone else in crisis?
Yes, so call, text, or chat. We are constantly monitoring to make sure that we always stay under 20 seconds of answering time for the calls. Right now for text and chat, we have a 100% response rate, and we want to it that way. So call, text, or chat 988, and whatever help you're needing, you will immediately be connected to a life crisis intervention counselor. And not only are they going to help you through crisis de-escalation and intervention, but they're also going to connect you to services in your community. If you need more than just crisis intervention over the phone, they will make sure that you are connected to mobile crisis response, who will be coming to help you in person. And in Oregon, under our administrative rules, every county has mobile crisis teams that are available for everyone, regardless of insurance status, age, anything. It is a service that's available for everyone under statute.
Thank you so, so much. And for anyone that needs additional information, you can go to 988-LIFELINE.org. Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Ask a Black Doctor. I'll thank our guests. This was an amazing episode. Again, we say it every single time. Share the information. Let's get it out into community. You have an opportunity here to get involved. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.